We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt, that guy over there, as always in Chicagoland, the one, the only, the incomparable Dan Rubenstein. Sir! Woo! How are you?
I'm good. Yesterday was perfect. We're recording this at Sunday, what, a little after 10 a.m. Eastern time. Obviously, subscribers at verballers.com will have access to it before anybody else Sunday afternoon Eastern time. Yesterday was perfect. Yesterday was a perfect day of college football between the shootouts, the close calls, the comebacks, the emotions, the crowds, everything, the noise, the lack of having Oregon's passing game in my life. I could not have asked for a better week six. It was everything I could have hoped for. And it almost like, you know how they say that when quarterbacks get very comfortable, the game slows down for them, right? That everything slows. Yesterday slowed down for me. I was able to just sit in ridiculous moments and say, F yeah, this is the best. It's just the best.
It really was. There were 28 FBS teams that were on bye, which meant 14 fewer games for you and I to talk about. It sure as hell didn't feel it, though.
Yeah.
Of the games that were played, just a lot of really close games that came down to the wire. We had upsets. We had new storylines, even if there weren't upsets that we're going to dive into here over the next hour or so. We've got an incredible batch of Week 6 reverbs that our boy Dylan cut together deep into the night using a different program than usual because he had to, like, pulling out all the stops here to put this show together. We appreciate those of you who are Patreon subscribers, courtesy of verballers.com, who are watching the show live. We appreciate all of our Patreon subscribers who are listening to this show when it drops a bit early on Sunday afternoon when the emotion is still a little bit raw. And certainly last but not least, we appreciate everybody out there, even if you're not in on the Patreon. There's still time.
Oh my
gosh. But we're cool no matter what. We're cool. We appreciate you downloading and supporting and listening along as we do our best to go through a crazy week six, Daniel. Why don't we start at the top where we always do? Why don't we give a listen to those week six reverbs?
Did he use Super Mario Maker? Now I'm dying to know what he used to edit sounds last second.
I'm going to give you about 4 minutes to think about it, and then we'll talk it through. Here are your week six reverbs. Have a listen.
Dead time, children, from God's Fist and from Kyle Fields. Woo! Let's hear it.
Woo!
Hi, Dan and Ty. This is Dylan from Denver, Colorado.
Hey, Dan and Ty. This is Dan, today from Austin and Dallas, and now Austin. I am in pain.
Hey, fellas. Craig out of Minneapolis here.
Hey, it's Ray from Texas. I have all things Longhorns, and man, I just want to say after that game today...
Norman, Oklahoma, the one place in the country that can actually say the backup is better than the Heisman candidate.
Boomer Sooner.
More like the cries of Texas, am I right?
Spencer Rattler is going to be great for SMU next year.
So in terms of Spencer Rattler, are we calling this game the Red River sit-down?
I'm not in the student section, but I think I want Caleb Williams. Boomer Sooner, baby. Got the golden hat.
I just want to say that Matt Brown is 0-11 against the mighty Seminoles of Florida State. Go Noles.
Two teams, four quarterbacks. This is not going to go well. Go Hokies.
Someone call the East Lansing Nissan dealership because Kenneth Walker III, maybe, just maybe, needs a ride to the Heisman House. Go green, go white, go Michigan State.
Whose contingency planning was worse? Blockbuster Video when faced with the availability of streaming, or Penn State when faced with the lack of availability of Sean Clifford?
Current University of Iowa student, former student at Penn State University, and all I have to say is, my emotions!
Boy, that stinky Iowa offense sure smelled pretty nice on that game-winning touchdown pass, huh? I guess what I'm saying is, thanks for locking that one up, Ty. Go Hawks.
It's about that time for many parents to talk to their children about an undefeated Iowa.
Dan, as a one parent to another, I'm hoping you can help me talk to my three kids about an undefeated Iowa.
The time has come. It's time to talk to your kids about an undefeated Wake Forest.
Y'all thought I was going to say Iowa.
Nothing like being a South Carolina fan. Your punter throws a fake punt for a touchdown and you get six sacks. But when your defensive end throws an interception and you're down 28 to nothing after the first quarter, you're pretty much, you're done.
Predictions on your Thursday previews. And each Saturday, we've blown out our opponent. So please, continue leaving us out of your preview so we keep blowing out our opponent. Go Vols.
Don't look now, and it only took 105 years. But my beloved Utah Utes won a football game in Los Angeles.
Georgia in their last 17 games against Auburn is 14-3. Georgia in their last 17 games against Vanderbilt is 14-3.
It is time to show the world that a Mississippi Saturday night is even hotter than an Urban Meyer Sunday night.
Will Levis is back, baby. De facto SEC East Championship next week. Let's go, Cat.
I hear Penn State's looking for a quarterback. I think there's one here at UK, Will Levis. He's got five total touchdowns at least. I don't know. It's kind of hard to keep track.
Hi, so happy Michigan won. Margaret from Michigan.
It's
hallelujah.
I'm Michigan Wolverine.
This is Jacob.
And Sarah from Denver.
Did A&M just win our clunkers? Jacob and Eggs.
The only thing that comes to mind is this how the rebels felt after they destroyed the Death Star?
Apparently the secret ingredient to beating Alabama is just pick up a 50-something percent passer and just yeet.
Hey guys, it's me, Scott Frost. I just think they should let us win. It's just not fair. I know we didn't score more points, but we told everyone we were going to win this one.
All right. Wow. What a batch of...
Buddy.
Batch of reverbs. Kudos again to our guy Dylan for cutting that together with Audacity, Dan.
Audacity. Not a sponsor. Could be. Not a sponsor. Could be. Audacity. Actually, probably not.
Definitely
not. Stoop for you. Audacity is an awesome way. It's very democratic. If you want to learn how to edit audio, if you want to produce a podcast and you want to dip your toes in the water, it's an awesome first step.
Okay. I'll give you that.
It'll help you learn.
That's fine. I'll give you that. Okay.
We've all been there. You've edited in Audacity. Come on. We've got a lot to get to.
It is week six, and we will start at the very top, Dan. We will start with Texas A&M, 41, Alabama, 38. I cannot freaking believe it. I cannot freaking believe that this game went the way it did. We talked all week. I did specifically about how A&M was broken. This is a team that a couple weeks ago beat Colorado by what, 3 points or something?
10-7. Yep. Lost to Mississippi State. Yeah.
They eked one out. They've lost their last two. They've looked genuinely broken on offense. People were starting to wonder about Jimbo and the law and the big contract. And you said he's starting to use some of the same excuses that he did at Florida State, just like bad vibrations across the board.
Yep.
And then this. Alabama had won 100 straight games against unranked opponents. They went into this game an 18-point favorite. It was in Kyle Field, very loud Kyle Field at night. Not an easy place to play by any stretch of the imagination. But I don't know if anybody saw this kind of performance coming from A&M. Surely you might have expected a good A&M defense to step up and cover the point spread.
Mm-hmm.
But man, after what we have seen the last like month of A&M football, there was no way, no how they were going to pull an upset here. To your point, this is what we got in week six. This is part of why it was perfect. Not for Alabama fans, mind you.
For sure.
But for college football, everyone else in the college football ether, this is why you're a fan. Upsets like this.
The college football ether. Up above the land.
Mm.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. And this is Texas A&M's backup quarterback. And, you know, we can start at the end and come back. The fact that he was able to make his way back to the field after taking that hit as he threw a nothing short of a dime. 10 out of 10, A-plus ball to a specific point in the end zone to tie the game. They were down 38-31, I believe. As he's getting hit low to complete that pass for the touchdown, I mean, it was a complete performance in that A&M made plays in all three phases, right? They overwhelmed the Alabama offensive line, which looks out of sorts, both in the way that they're coached. You know, I saw, I think it was Richard Johnson showing like weird slide protections away from the blitz. There were moments like that. Evan Neal is incredible, but yeah, a down game for Alabama's offensive line, a down game for just finishing drives. We saw that Bryce Young bad interception in the end zone. A bad game for referees at certain points, be it with dicey targeting, be it with Evan Neal moving as they throw it to as Bryce Young throws it to a wide open Jameson Williams uncovered on the other side of the field. Just an incredible experience this game. But I think it's taking your hat off to what A&M was able to accomplish, what, in the return game with Devin Achane, in the passing game, Isaiah Spiller both carrying the ball and catching the ball out of the backfield. Like, it was just an unbelievable night in College Station, one that neither one of us saw coming, as you mentioned, on this level. And I think underscores the point that it takes time for backup quarterbacks sometimes. It takes time to come through and get comfortable. We saw moments in previous games of Zach Calzada making plays, but through it until last night, and even at times last night, understandably against Alabama, he looked uncomfortable. He looked unprepared. He looked unable to rise to the moment.
Look, Zach Calzada last night was when Verbal Kint turned into Kaiser Soze. That's how I felt. It came out of nowhere. You're right. We saw hints of it.
Yeah.
We knew enough that he was not Taquan Roberson. All right. We knew he was serviceable.
It's not a Roberson thing. It's across the sport. Backup quarterbacks thrust into action against good teams. It's tough. It's just tough.
It is tough. It is especially tough.
Yeah.
We knew that he was serviceable. He was not a total disaster. But last night, I mean, this is far and away better than anything we could have expected. 285, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. He constantly stood tall in the pocket. He was very accurate with the ball. He did not seem overwhelmed by the moment. And more often than not, that is what you see when you put a backup in a situation. Now, he's had a few weeks to kind of find his way, to your point. But even still, man, like, that's a big spot. That's a big spot to be in. I don't care if you're the starter or if you're the backup. We'll talk about Spencer Rattler in a few minutes. Spencer Rattler came into the year one of the guys I think unanimously picked to be the Heisman front runner.
Sure.
You could argue at points in time the moment was too big for him in that Texas game.
I mean, the moment might be 2021 as a whole. He has not had a phenomenal year. I mean, that's, and it's not necessarily a majority on him.
But that's the point, right? I mean,
yeah.
What Zach Calzada did, I am now officially entrenched, officially on board, I should say, with the Calzada Armada.
Oh, yeah.
as we sail the high seas of the SEC, A&M looked great. Good for them. Big win.
Mm-hmm.
Defense did enough to get some key stops and create some key turnovers when they had to. Bryce Young, for his part, on the Alabama side, still looks superb. The Alabama offense just committed a few too many mistakes here and there. And, you know, not punching it into the end zone in spots comes back to bite you, as it always does. But just a great game. Wow, what a win. What a win for A&M.
I mean, and more on Alabama as well. So you lose a DB early. You have Brian Robinson running completely wild. Just incredibly impressive. Jameson Williams making play after play. Like, the game was there for Alabama. They lost in the moments. They lost situationally, as you mentioned, giving up. I mean, they score the special teams touchdown falling on the blocked punt, but then they give up the long kick return to Devin Achane. Like, the game was there, and it was an uncharacteristically unfocused performance from Alabama in a big spot.
Yeah. A&M wins.
I credit to A&M.
A&M wins 41-38, the upset of the year in week six. We've got a long ways to go. My sense is that there will be many more upsets to follow. It is just going to be that kind of year, and I'm thrilled to be part of it, frankly. I'm thrilled to be part of it. It makes me very, very happy to be a fan of college football, and especially doing this podcast with you on a tri-weekly basis now.
I mean, we've seen what? Clemson lose to NC State, Ohio State lose to Oregon, Alabama lose to A&M. Like, it's all over the sport that we're just like, not out of nowhere, but on a certain level, Anthony Brown, Oregon, on a certain level, like Devin Leary, NC State, Zach Calzada, Texas A&M. Like, it's unexpected at the very least, and just wild and chaotic at best.
Let's go to the Penn State-Iowa game.
Yep.
Iowa wins by a 23-20 score. To our caller who's trying to incite me, I hate to inform you that the Iowa offense is still pretty bad.
Of course it is.
It's still very bad. But, yes, they made a couple big plays. Spencer Petras threw a nice pass on that game-winning touchdown pass. To give you some context here, if you didn't watch the game, Penn State jumped out to a quick 14-3 lead and then 17-3 early in the second quarter. If I'm being totally honest here, if Sean Clifford doesn't get hurt, Penn State probably runs away with it. It felt like it had that kind of momentum. Not to say Iowa wouldn't have come back a little bit.
Right.
But it just felt like Iowa was outclassed when Sean Clifford was in there. But the problems did start for Penn State once Clifford went down. Now, we haven't gotten official word as to what went down with them. Some folks said maybe it's a shoulder, maybe it's a back, maybe it's ribs. He was on the sideline. He was in street clothes. We did have that one shot of him walking out, kind of holding his back. So I'm assuming a back or a rib thing based on the hit that we saw preceding him leaving the field. We will have to definitely wait and see what happens with his status now moving forward, because the Taquan Roberson experience was just not the answer. I don't want to be too hard on the kid. He was a backup. He was stepping into a really big spot. It was so bad that he couldn't even snap the ball. It was that bad. There were 8 false start penalties after he came into the game. And again, a lot of that's on coaching, but some of that's on him.
Right.
And there are plenty of screenshots. You could probably find half a dozen of them if you go around the internet, of Penn State receivers running wide open on big plays, big fourth down plays, and him just kind of locking in on one guy, going to that guy, and Iowa being all over it. So normal backup stuff, but Roberson looked really bad. He did not look like he was prepared at all in that game. The coaching staff didn't seem to have him prepared for that situation. And by and large, this is exactly what Iowa wanted. This was music to Iowa's ears. This is the game that they play. It's not always sexy, but Kirk Ferentz has been doing it since 1999. They force turnovers. They play good defense. They work with the short field. Their punter is a freaking weapon.
Yeah.
He is a weapon. He might be their best offensive player outside Tyler Goodson. And Penn State was constantly in this position with their back to their own goal, starting a backup quarterback, not wanting to do too much to maybe throw another interception. Iowa got 4 of them in this game, but at the same time, not really doing much to give themselves a chance of winning. So, look, you credit Iowa for doing what it needed to do. Again, doesn't need to be sexy. It just needs to be more points on the board at the end of 60 minutes. they were able to get the job done. As a Penn State alum, as Uh-oh. Somebody perhaps who was Uh-oh. A little biased, it's a very tough pill to swallow because
sure.
really the story of two teams was Sean Clifford out there versus not with Sean Clifford out there. But look, that's just the way the game goes sometimes. And it takes a full team in order to win some of these games. And Iowa did what it needed to.
You a Big Lebowski guy?
No, I'm not. I hate that movie. I really don't like
really?
The movie. Yeah, I don't like it.
Oh, I
never
love
have
it.
Liked it.
Okay. There's a line Walter, who is played by John Goodman, says, say what you will about the tenets of national socialism. At least it's an ethos.
Right.
I find right. myself comparing the experience of watching Iowa win football games. Say what you will about Iowa's approach to winning football. It's an ethos. And strong teams win games that seem unwinnable. Strong teams find a way. Strong teams, chicken wire, duct tape, elbow grease, find a way. Iowa found a way. And that's what strong teams do. You say Iowa's not sexy? That defense is pretty sexy. Raise your hand if you're a fan of a team and you would like Iowa's defense. Pretty sure all but like 128 teams are keeping their hands down. So, Iowa won the game. They won a clunker. Brian Ferentz is the mayor of Clunk City. Okay? If you're going to live in Clunk City, at least be the mayor. At least make it work. At least make the town work for you.
Yeah,
Spencer Petras is not that good, and that's okay. We accept him for who he is. We accept the Iowa offense for what it is. Now, if Sean Clifford is in that game, Penn State probably scores at least another touchdown, and that's enough to win the game, right? But Agreed. That's not the reality in which we live.
It is not.
The reality in which we live is Penn State had to insert a backup quarterback who was, what, the fourth string quarterback last year, something like that. And he was not prepared in an incredibly difficult scenario in Kinnick Stadium against a great defense to move the ball at all. He would lock in on receivers, and it just wasn't happening for, was it Taquan Roberson?
Taquan
Roberson. Sean Clifford also threw two interceptions when he was in there that were not great. And while he did complete passes downfield and while he did move the chains, he was not especially amazing against Iowa, but an average quarterback against this defense probably wins the game for Penn State. It's football. Injuries happen. Contingency plans need to be made. And Penn State was not there to win in Kinnick. And so here we are. And we can live in an alternate reality where Sean Clifford's healthy for the full four quarters. But that's not where we are. The reality is Iowa is winning in a very specific way. And again, raise your hand if you would like to continually win all of your games in a very specific way, even if two chuckleheads like Ty Hildenbrandt and Dan Rubenstein look down on your offense.
Yeah, come I mean, on. I'm raising my hand, by the way.
Yeah. The Iowa experience, and I know like, Penn State fans are angry at Iowa fans for booing players. That's a select, a very small percentage of Iowa fans to me. Every sure. fan base has idiots, whatever. Those are idiots, by the way. Those Iowa fans booing the Penn State injured players are idiots and dumb and whatever. Ignore them. Iowa won the game. It was ugly. It was Iowa football. They win 8, 9, 10 games every year.
No.
Who am I at this point to sit up in my ivory tower and criticize a team that wins that often? I don't know.
Well, right. Likewise. I love the idea of Brian Ferentz building a sim city that is titled Clunk City with poor zoning, but just one very specific thing that it does well. There are enough fire stations to keep
He's
things
like
from
the
burning
dictator,
out of control.
A dictator of a random stan, right? And a random Kujbaris stan whose city is completely falling apart, but he lives in this palace of platinum and gold, right? He's a,
I don't know
a
what
corrupt madman of a dictator, and... Yeah. I guess it works. And similarly, if Spencer Petras goes down in this game, Iowa's probably not affected, right? Iowa's probably winning this game.
They're kind of immune from that, aren't they?
He makes 2.5 incredible plays a game. And that's enough. That's enough.
Well, look, I mean, enormous win for Iowa. Kudos to them.
Yeah.
The season is in front of them now. I think they're projected to win all of the games that are remaining on their schedule for whatever that's worth.
Right.
But definitely in control of their Big Ten destiny at this juncture in the season. And to be fair, so is Penn State.
Yeah.
With the way things are going, if they can get Clifford back, we'll have to wait on the details of his injury. you know, two teams that, I mean, Iowa obviously in control. They're probably going to be number two when the new poll pops.
Mm-hmm.
And Penn State, I think, still very much a factor in this crazy season that we have in 2021. Again, your final is 23-20. Good win for Iowa. Let's go on over to the Red River Shootout. That was loud in the headphones. It was sort of intended to be, Dan.
Yeah.
What a game we had in the Cotton Bowl. A legit shootout. I cannot believe that Oklahoma won this. I don't know how they covered the point spread here. I'm going to talk about a miracle front door cover. Just, this game started.
Sorry, puppies.
Sorry, pups. This game started. Texas had a 14-0 lead with like a minute and 53 seconds elapsed.
Mm-hmm.
It was right away. They were up 14-0. Oklahoma came back with a touchdown. Then Texas poured on two more. It was 28-7 before you could blink.
Yeah.
Then in the second quarter, Lincoln Riley starts playing footsies with Caleb Williams. He's their five-star true freshman. He was the guy that the student section was calling for, because the student section, of course, is an astute observer of football. Spencer Rattler just seemed very tentative. Like he was seeing ghosts, as you might say. I think this would be the proper context to use that terminology.
Yep.
Wasn't going downfield at all. And so they brought in Williams for a play, just a running play. And he put a nice move on a guy, ran for a 66-yard touchdown. Lincoln stuck with Rattler for, I think, two more drives. But then towards the end of the half, he fumbled it away. And that was that. Yeah. They brought in Caleb Williams for pretty much the entire second half. And he gave him a pop.
Mm-hmm.
He was totally willing, by the way, to throw that deep ball. Not always advisably so. All right. But he would see a matchup.
He gave his receivers a chance.
Yeah. A lot of those 50-50 balls, right?
Yeah.
And he knew he had athletes out there. He would see man-on-man coverage. And he would just sort of heave it. To Oklahoma's credit, to their receivers' credit, they just got some amazing plays. The combination of what they got in playmaking out wide with the effort late from Kennedy Brooks, who had two important touchdowns down the stretch. Oklahoma stormed back from an 18-point deficit to win this game 55-48. Casey Thompson, for his part on the Texas side, was very good. Five touchdowns, no picks, 388, almost 400 yards passing. Bijan Robinson had himself a pretty good game as well. But the storyline moving forward from this, unfortunately for Spencer Rattler, is going to be a quarterback controversy at Oklahoma, whether or not it should be Caleb Williams moving forward. And I would presume Oklahoma is going to move up in the polls.
Right.
You know, what do they need to do as a team to continue their growth and become a real contender for the playoff?
Fascinating storylines all over the field. All over the field. Obviously, the Caleb Williams one is the headliner, just to relieve somebody with Spencer Rattler's profile and success level early on in his career. But, man, Texas jumping out like they did. Xavier Worthy popping like he did. Now, Oklahoma's defense has taken some lumps in the back end. I understand that. But, damn, as a true freshman, on this level, on this stage, incredible. Casey Thompson hitting him incredibly accurately and impressively. And, man, so you have the Texas offensive line fading. You have Oklahoma's passing game coming alive. You have Kennedy Brooks leading the way and winning the game on a walk-off run.
A direct snap, yeah.
A direct snap, misdirection. And I want to give the proper credit here. I believe it's Braden Willis, who is the Oklahoma tight end.
The block.
The block of the millennium. Just incredible. Just incredible. On, I think, an outside linebacker for Texas that really sprung it open because the lane was, like, he was basically untouched, I believe, on that run. So just an incredible back and forth, incredible TV. The thing that stood out to me in watching this game is the unsustainability of Texas and explosive offensive plays that, when getting them, life was amazing. But it was that second pitch. It's not the out pitch. It's just that second pitch.
Second pitch. That's what I've been saying, right?
Six drives going three or four plays and out quickly. And that's just, it's hanging their own defense out to dry and allowing Oklahoma, I think at one point it was 38-20, like in the second half. And it's, if that Texas offense is getting off the field quickly, and Bijan Robinson was good, but you take away that 50-yard run and he was merely okay. right? And that's fine. Like, Oklahoma's defense up front can be pretty scary. So that to me is, how many different speeds can Texas's offense go? You know, the old Chip Kelly Oregon offense, it was great because it went fast, but it had different speeds. It was like the red, yellow, green. It could go slow. It could go at a medium pace. Shout out Adam Sandler. I am wondering, and this is year one, what Texas's offense looks like, and just, can we drive down the field a little bit slower? Or can we just, like, on 3rd and 7, can we get a 9-yard pass and just keep the chains moving? Like, just that intermediate element to an offense is where Texas really needs to grow. And they will. I imagine they will. They're going to grow on defense. They're going to tackle better. They're going to, on all three levels, they're going to become more talented and develop better, I believe, under Pete Kwiatkowski. But a fascinating, fascinating game. Caleb Williams coming in that spot. I don't know. It's probably some sort of combination of ballsy Lincoln Riley decision making and maybe the team being ready to move past Spencer Rattler, right? Like, if Spencer Rattler was the heart and soul of this offense and this team and is leading the team and everybody lines up behind Spencer Rattler, I don't know if that move's being made. But I think it might speak to, this is me fully guessing irresponsibly, that something may be up behind the scenes that made it a little bit easier for Lincoln Riley to move on to Caleb Williams.
Caleb Williams came in and definitely gave them a spark. There's simply no denying it.
That fumbled snap and pickup and roll out and throw to the corner of the end. It's just, he's a playmaker.
He's a playmaker. He's a dynamic runner. He's also a bigger guy, which helps. So big win for Oklahoma here. Wow, to come from behind. Did you see the ref in this game, by the way?
Jacked beyond his gills, right?
He looked like Lou Ferrigno. He was ridiculous.
I saw somebody tweet out, like, this guy could step in on the field right now. And just, he could fill a lane.
He could be a gunner. Could definitely be a gunner.
Yeah.
55-48.
Front door cover, by the way.
Front door cover. Yep. Ole Miss, 52. Arkansas, 51. Speaking of shootouts, Dan.
Yeah.
Back on Tuesday of last week, Travis May, who writes for a website, said that this might be the best game of the day. He might have been right about that. Mm-hmm. What a fun game. You were writing to me about this game. It's getting fun. My friends were texting me, hey, this Ole Miss game is getting fun. Over 100 total points, over 13 or close to 1,300 total yards. Not much defense to speak of until the very last play of the game. Arkansas scores on a 9-yard touchdown pass to Warren Thompson with no time left to make it 52-51. Sam Pittman's a riverboat gambler. Sam Pittman says, we're going for two. I love it. I love it. Goes for two. Nobody's open. Ole Miss did a good job covering on that one specific play and just clogging up the passing lanes and putting some pressure on KJ Jefferson and whatnot. And so they get the stop. They end up winning. But like, I'm not going to sit here and read off the stats because there were so many of them. Both teams were extremely impressive on offense, extremely impressive on the ground, which is probably more of a story for Ole Miss than it would be for the Arkansas side.
I mean, no, they've been running really well this year.
They've been running very well this year.
Yeah.
But I just feel like their identity is still much more on the passing side with Matt Corral.
Sure.
So to do it in a big game here against a good defense like Arkansas was notable to me. But a back and forth game, a fun game, truly one of those deals. The last team with the ball is the one that's going to win. And Arkansas had a chance to do just that. They couldn't get the 2-point conversion. But how much of this game did you watch? What did you feel while you were watching it? What do you feel about these teams now moving forward?
I watched the whole game. These two teams, and it's already been proven, like, they're crazy entertaining. Short of what Arkansas looked like against Georgia, even Ole Miss was entertaining in the second half against Alabama. It was not a game at that point, but it's Georgia and Alabama, whatever. I don't know what you can second guess about what Arkansas did decision. You can second guess their defensive effort, their way to, you know, they're adjusting to the rushing attack. And Matt Corral only threw the ball, what, 20, 21 times in this game? And Lane Kiffin as a play caller that second half with sort of figuring out where Arkansas was going, where Barry Odom was going on defense and hitting those big plays. It was, what, Dontario Drummond and Braylon Sanders. Lane Kiffin at one point, I think, threw a clipboard during the Braylon Sanders touchdown catch and run. I don't know what you second guess here. I mean, there was a 50-yard field goal attempt from a college kicker on 4th and 9, I believe from the Ole Miss 32. Arkansas attempted a 50-yarder. That wasn't good. I guess you could second guess that. And there was a, they took the field goal points. They took the 3 on 4th and 5 pretty deep in Ole Miss territory. But at that point, I don't think either coach was thinking this was a 52-51 game.
No.
So taking points kind of made sense there, given the down and distance. I understand going for it. I understand giving yourself a better chance to win and score touchdowns. Scoring touchdowns is always better than field goals. But I don't imagine that they had in mind that this is the rhythm of the game. That's where that was going. So you're right. And Lane Kiffin said it after the game. Like, he was asked something about, like, oh, how did you get the stop? How did your defense respond? Blah, blah, blah. And it was like, our defense didn't do anything. They played about as terribly as a defense can play. They just happened to go for two and not get it. And that's why we won the game. And so, crazy entertaining. It would be terrific if Ole Miss and Arkansas figured out ways to at least get some more stops and figure out creative ways to get off the field or force turnovers or something like that. But I am not here as a television viewer to complain about any part of this game. It's wonderful.
No, wonderful game. Again, 52-51. Came down to the wire. Admire the move by Sam Pittman. He is trying to build something at Arkansas. He's trying to revive that program.
So you're okay on the road in that spot going for two instead of playing for overtime. I love it. I'm good with it.
Yeah, I'm good with it because what are the odds your defense is going to get a stop at that point?
Right.
You know?
It's not like they had shown much.
No. So if you have that chance, if you've got the hammer, if you can go out with a win.
I agree.
You take the chance.
At this point, moving forward, is there an SEC matchup? I know I'm putting you on the spot, but like that you look forward to from a pure entertainment standpoint when these two teams are at least pretty good than Ole Miss, Arkansas. Like, they're fraught with unbelievably entertaining baggage. Like, there are other games around the conference, other games around the country, but man, just in terms of what did I use on the Solid Saturday show? Like, the chaotic energy involved in this matchup?
Well,
it's amazing.
Ole Miss plays Tennessee next week, which could have some chaotic energy.
My God. I'm going to eat something special for it. It's incredible.
Yeah. Big win here. Real quick, I do want to get through all the other SEC
games. Yeah, we got a lot
to. But I should mention, since we are talking about, you know, top teams and important games and upsets, BYU lost.
They did.
BYU, the number 10 team in the previous AP poll, 26-17, they lost to Boise. We joked about a podcast dedicated to baseball closers earlier this week. There's definitely been a Jose Mesa quality to Boise State this year.
Mm-hmm.
They've blown second half leads a couple times. UCF and Nevada come to mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this one, though, they finished strong. In this one, though, they held BYU to just one touchdown over the last three quarters. It was that Boise defense that stepped up. The turning point in this game, they got back-to-back fumbles in the second quarter.
Yes.
Off of BYU, both of which went for Boise touchdowns. So a good win for them. It sucks for BYU to lose this one, but they do play a tough schedule, and Boise was up for the challenge. Jaren Hall was back. He had a good game. He had a career high in terms of passing yardage. And they outgained Boise, so the offense looked okay, but just a few too many mistakes, and Boise came to play here as the number 10 team in the country goes down.
Great win from Boise in year one of Andy Avalos. They ran the ball relatively well. I think it was the Oregon transfer, Cyrus Abebe-Lakio, ran well for Boise. So really nice win for an uneven Boise season, you know, started by that UCF blown lead.
All right. So I'm going to read through the other scores in the SEC, and then we can circle back and talk about what moved the needle for us. We had Kentucky 42, LSU 21. I know what the storyline is going to be coming out of that. We'll get to it momentarily.
Yep.
We had Georgia 34, Auburn 10, Tennessee 45, South Carolina 20, Florida blanks Vanderbilt 42-0, and Missouri 48, North Texas 35. Tyler Beatty goes over 200 yards rushing with two touchdowns in that game. I want to circle back to the LSU game.
Yeah, let's.
Kentucky was favored by 3 going into that one. They scored in their first two drives. The rest of the first half, it was back and forth with punts. Felt a little bit like Kentucky's other work this season, okay? Wasn't anything far and away different from what we'd seen before. In the second half, though, the offense came alive. They open up the second half with a 4-minute touchdown drive. They make it 21-0, and then they just keep their foot on the gas. This was very much a game where Kentucky asserted itself on offense. 330 yards, 3 touchdowns on the ground for them. Two of those touchdowns, by the way, came from Will the Thrill, our boy Will Levis, who is now officially back, I should say.
I don't even know what that means anymore.
No, no one does. He looked really good in this game. Kentucky 6-0 and on the road against Georgia next week. It's weird to say that that's kind of the showpiece for the week 7, but it is. It's true.
Definitely.
And if you're LSU, the storyline I was alluding to is Coach O. Coach O. The drumbeat was already growing louder even before this game kicked off. It's going to be deafening after this. I think if this based on nothing, I think he's donezo. I think he's toast.
Yeah, I mean, it might happen as soon as this show, before the show is released to the public.
It does not feel like this is going to a good place for Coach O and this LSU team in 2021.
No, that is the story. That is the national story coming out of this game, is what has happened to LSU in the last 2 years. But to me, the actual like fishbowl of this game story is, man, Kentucky's good.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if LSU is reeling. I don't care if they're a shell of who they normally are or who they were 2 years ago. If that is all true, then a really good team stomps that team. And that's what Kentucky did.
They pounded
Will Levis in the red zone. Will Levis with his arm, he was pinpoint. He was nails. He spread the ball around. He ran super well. He was a weapon on the ground, which we had seen at times for stretches at Penn State in relief duty. But he was accurate. They ran the ball. It was what Kovacevic Smoke and Chris Rodriguez were hitting the hole hard. This was a team that has... I mean, that had last night and has in general its act together. Now, if they can cut back the turnovers a little bit, that would be wonderful. But from Kentucky to go from where it was, which was just sort of running the ball on offense and hoping to control clock and then playing great defense. You know, remember Josh Allen coming off the edge, all those guys. That's great. And they won games, and it's tough to win games in the SEC at Kentucky. But for them to do what they did against LSU and score, what, it was 42 points? They got stronger over the course of the game. They were strong in the red zone. The play calling, like, I don't know how much longer Liam Cohen's going to be in Lexington, because my God, is his profile now raised as an offensive mind. But Kentucky's just a full-on really good team. They're flawed in a couple of ways. They're not as deep as the better teams in the SEC, but who cares? They're just impressive. And that was just a statement last night. So good for the Cats.
Good for the Cats. The Georgia game, I'll just call out very quickly. Stetson Bennett got the start in place of JT Daniels, who he's still dealing with his lat injury. He was solid, and Georgia rushed for over 200 yards, 2 touchdowns on the ground. Their defense, just too much for Auburn. It's kind of been the story of 21 for the Georgia Bulldogs. The defense is overwhelming. Tank Bigsby held to 2.8 yards per carry, did have a touchdown. That was just the second touchdown, by the way, that the Georgia Bulldogs have given up on defense all year long. So the defense remains very formidable. The offense is doing what it needs to. And despite all the talk about JT Daniels and what he could bring to this Georgia offense before the start of the season, he can't get on the field. He can't get healthy. He's not healthy.
There's an oblique injury. Yeah.
No, it's a lat. He's dealing with a lat.
Is there a difference? I don't know.
I think your lat's up here.
Okay. And your obliques are where? You're doing this on a visual medium.
Your obliques are down here, kind of on the side.
Okay.
And Stetson Bennett has done pretty well in every situation where he's needed to so far this year. So good on Georgia for making it work. I still think there's a little bit of wondering about what could have been if you had a little bit more of a downfield threat in the passing game. But
do not disrespect Ladd McConkey on the show. Do not disrespect the connection of Stetson to Ladd.
Yeah.
He made plays. I mean, Stetson Bennett doesn't have a big arm. He will underthrow a guy. Better to under than over. So the connection worked in as much as Georgia has a winning formula. It's run the ball, move the chains, suffocate on defense, and you're probably not hanging around for more than a quarter and a half. No. And it's a very difficult defense and team to play against. And even with Stetson Bennett, he made plays. He made plays with his feet. He made plays with his arm. They're going to hit you over the top, you know, as soon as they sort of roll you into thinking they're just going to power run the ball away. And it works. Georgia's an excellent team. I don't know. There's not much to sort of dive into it. And
nope, they're
if
very
they're an excellent team with a backup quarterback, man, I don't know. That's scary as hell.
And they're going to be the new number one team in the country.
Yeah.
When the latest AP poll out here shortly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I'll just mention Tennessee very quickly because you and I were riding back and forth to the tune of, man, Tennessee. We said on the show this past week, they are at very least interesting adjacent.
Yeah.
And they seem to be getting better. They were up 35-0 with 6 minutes left in the first half. We didn't expect too much of a fight from South Carolina.
No.
But the point spread to me was notable. It was like 11 points or something like that. It just felt like it was too low. I was wondering if Vegas saw something that we didn't, because Tennessee has been very dynamic on offense. I think we were right in this case. Maybe we should have stuck to our guns a little bit more and gone Tennessee, because they just drilled South Carolina here between Hendon Hooker and Tyon Evans, and you know, out wide they look really, really good right now. So we'll see.
Yeah. And important to remember, Josh Heupel has a previously developed quarterback running his offense, right? He has a quarterback who has shown more than enough to be considered one of the better quarterbacks in the conference, and one of, I don't know, the best 20 quarterbacks in the country, 25 quarterbacks at his best. And the next step is going to be finding and developing your own guy. But as far as Tennessee on the right path, I think it's irrefutable that
it feels like coming out
of the gate, they go up 28-0 in the first quarter. Tyon Evans is a playmaker. You know, Velus Jones, the USC transfer, like, they've got guys, and they're good enough as a coaching staff to take advantage, and they're scoring, and they're, you know, they're blocking on the outside. They are showing what needs to be shown for a team in the process of getting its act together. Tennessee is exciting adjacent. How about that?
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Over in the Big Ten, we had Michigan by 3 on the road over Nebraska, 32-29. We had Michigan State 31-13 on the road over Rutgers, and we had Ohio State 66-17 over Maryland. CJ Stroud with just a monster game. 5 touchdowns, over 400 yards, 56-10 at one point late in the third quarter. Did you lock up Maryland?
I locked up Maryland against Iowa. Oh. I was not going to do such a thing.
Okay, good for you.
Ohio State. Yeah, no, I did not. Very quickly, Ohio State, Maryland. CJ Stroud is the best quarterback in the country right now.
Kind of is.
I mean, it's Maryland and Rutgers, and he had a great game against Oregon. They don't have the schedule to say that emphatically, but man, his numbers are bonkers.
Yeah, he's having an incredible season.
And they're playing the younger dudes on defense too. I sort of noticed in skimming through this game, like, they are they're just going with best guy available at every single spot, and whoever's winning more one-on-ones gets on the field. Good for them.
Yeah, and that's a problem. That's a problem, yeah. Because the deeper we get into this thing, as those guys develop and get more comfortable and learn their assignments a little bit more, those are the teams that tend to rise up very quickly.
Yep.
And it's strange to say, but you've got teams like Ohio State who are flying a little bit under the radar now just by virtue of that week two loss to Oregon.
Good timing. If you're going to lose a game to at least a pretty good team and do it early.
Michigan, Nebraska. Okay. Another really good game. Just what, 13-0. Yeah, Michigan, 13-0 at half. Nebraska storms back. They have 22 points in the third quarter. They grab a 22-19 lead going into that final quarter. Back and forth until a crucial fumble by Adrian Martinez with under 2 minutes to play. He said afterwards he thought the play was dead. I guess I understand his point of view there. I
would say the same thing if I were him, to be clear.
Yeah, I understand where he's coming from. It didn't. Yeah. I don't know if it looked to the television viewing eye that the play was dead, but there's at least a shred of truth in what he was saying. He needs to take better care of the football. He admitted as much in the post game. Scott Frost did a literal facepalm after that play.
He always looks like he's watching the biggest screen at a sports book and seeing his life savings slowly dwindle away thanks to, like, at the same time, Mookie Betts and Trey Young. Like, just like, what is happening? Why is this always happening to me? Damn you, MGM.
Michigan kicks a 39-yard field goal with Jake Moody. Michigan survives 32-29, Dan.
Yeah.
Where are you at with Michigan and Nebraska?
Michigan's a good team. Cade McNamara threw his first interception of the season. It was a great play from Nebraska. Ramir Johnson was the playmaker for Nebraska. Nebraska was held scoreless, as you mentioned, in the first half. Like, to beat an at least good team in Michigan, show me something for four quarters. Show America something. Show Ty something. Show Mama H something for four quarters. And everything's going to point to Adrian Martinez and that fumble at the end of the game. One, he had a minute and was at midfield to win that game, right?
Yeah.
That didn't end the game. And if memory serves, early on in that game, Nebraska drove the field and got, what, -1 yards within the Michigan five? Like, it's not the big things as much as it is winning situations against good teams at home with the crowd behind you that Nebraska just fails to do over and over again. This is a good Nebraska team that has underwhelming results. They have a quarterback who can make plays, but kind of disappears sometimes and isn't always put in the best position. This is a defense that can win 9-10 games. If the entire team, if the entire plane was made out of the Nebraska defense, they're winning this game. But the reality is Nebraska disappears for far too long, doesn't take advantage of its opportunities when presented, and that's how we get to the place where Scott Frost is looking into his future and wondering what his next job will be eventually. Looking at the big board at the MGM and thinking, how did we get here?
Nebraska is a good team. It does feel like they're improving.
They should have wins over the Michigan schools. There's no good reason they haven't beaten Michigan State and Michigan this year. There's just not a good reason.
It still feels a little bit too much like the offense is Adrian Martinez will giveth and taketh away.
For sure. The Nebraska fan base is probably the most tortured this year just in terms of what Nebraska feeds to it, which is a constant injection of hope and poison, which I guess might be all of the same thing. But man, every week.
Yeah, it's tough. And an interesting subplot for them now, they're probably beating Minnesota and Purdue next two games, but they likely need to beat one of Ohio State, Wisconsin, or Iowa to make a bowl game. Wisconsin looks like the low-hanging fruit there.
Definitely.
However, if they can knock off one of the other two, which I think they're good enough to do, maybe not Ohio State at this point, but I think they could beat Iowa if they got enough breaks. What a seismic shift that would set off in the college football landscape right now with where we're at. So Nebraska has a lot to play for and can still very much impact the college football season as we're coming to know it here in 21.
They have Nebraska has Ohio State the week after Ohio State has Penn State. And that game is in Lincoln, I believe. So
yeah, exactly.
It's set up, but like I can't buy that stock.
No.
I can't get on board. Like, that was a perfect opportunity to beat a good top 10 team. And it's just, it's too uneven an offense.
Michigan State, by the way, gaudy numbers from Kenneth Walker III.
Yeah.
Jalen Naylor, my God, 221 yards receiving.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Thorne looked really good. They were really good on the road. I think our friend Matt Hinton put it best on Twitter that he's just not used to seeing Michigan State be this explosive. They had some really big plays in this game. So kudos to Sparty for keeping the train rolling.
Rutgers.
It's Rutgers, but still.
It's Rutgers.
The point spread was five.
They did what you should do. Yeah.
They did what you should do. I should finally mention that Wisconsin also shut out Illinois. I forgot to mention that one. 24-0 to round out the Big Ten.
They ran the ball well, which is new for Wisconsin this year. Yeah.
Let's go on over to the Big 12. Baylor 45, West Virginia 20. And wow, TCU 52, Texas Tech 31, Dan.
Yes, sir.
Thoughts on these games?
TCU's defense is still kind of broken, but you score 35 points and a half. You run for over 300 yards. It's Kendre Miller and Zach Evans. It's a great day to be a Frog, all things considered. Max Duggan only throws the ball, 10 times?
They went full Wisconsin. Full Wisconsin with this playbook.
Great. Yep. Great. No, that was great. The Baylor story is pretty wonderful to me. The defense has its act together. They were up, 45-13 deep into that game. And there was a meaningless West Virginia touchdown scored. Gary Bohannon looks comfortable and confident and has a nice arm, moves well. They're running the ball. Was it Abram? Was it Tyquan Thornton who had the long catch? There are just pieces coming together. There are playmakers. They seem well coached. I was banging the drum about Grimey. You were super down on the Bears preseason. But here you are.
Here I am.
Accepting an at least pretty good, promising, act-together Baylor in a conference that is all over the place.
This wasn't even a close game.
No.
Baylor killed him. And,
man, I don't know what West Virginia does, by the way.
Yeah, West Virginia, for as much as I kind of did an about-face on what I had said earlier in the year, which was West Virginia is sort of lost right now. I don't know which direction they're headed. Then I took that back and I said, it feels like it's going in a good direction. I don't know how I feel after this. This was just not a good showing on the road. It's been a bit of a gauntlet for West Virginia. Maybe they need a moment, a beat to catch themselves back up to speed here. But it was definitely not a good look for them. And on the Baylor side, you know, everybody, I think, gravitates towards the big Gary Bohannon numbers and Tyquan Thornton, but really good at the point of attack.
Which we haven't been able to say.
No, really good on both sides, the offensive and defensive lines. And I think that's just really important. So kudos to Dave Aranda. Does definitely have this thing, going in a good direction here as they win 45-20.
Abram Smith, by the way, and it was a pick six for TCU to get to 35 in that first half against Texas Tech.
Over in the ACC, we had Florida State knocking off North Carolina. Really good game for Jordan Travis. Good for him. We had Georgia Tech 31-27 over the Duke Blue Devils. we'll just leave it there. We had Virginia 34-33 over Louisville. The Hoos trailed 17 heading into the fourth quarter. They needed three touchdowns to win, the last of which came with just 22 ticks left from Brennan Armstrong, who had another 400-yard game. We had Wake Forest winning in overtime in the Carrier Dome, Dan. Do we have the sound?
Yeah.
The Carrier Dome is where teams go to die.
And it seemed like that was going to be true.
It seemed like
Wake
it was
stomped on the ground.
Going to be true. They kicked a field goal to grab the lead. Syracuse did, but they eventually lose on a touchdown. This game sort of went the way we thought, by the way, with Syracuse having a lot of success on the ground. Over 350 yards. They had three touchdowns on the ground. The Wake run defense is still extremely suspect, but a nice win nonetheless to go on the road to the Carrier Dome. I think we're both in agreement here that Syracuse is is not as bad as would appear if you just look at the win-loss record.
Oh, this was so winnable. It would have justified my sound. By the way, Garrett Schrader in that game rushed for almost 200 yards.
Yeah.
Like, they've found a guy. If he can pop some more, if that offense can generate some more plays downfield, I mean, that's a big if. It's not easy, but it's the ACC.
It's the ACC.
They become, again, interesting adjacent. How about that?
And then there was the Notre Dame game, 32-29.
Yeah.
You watched this game?
No. I watched a sped up version this morning, but I didn't sit and watch this game because I didn't trust Brian Kelly when he said during the week, I know who the guy is. We found our guy. We're sticking with our guy for the rest of the year. And I just watched him say that, and I was like, okay, Brian, I'm not watching Braxton Burmeister against this carousel. Nah.
It is truly a quarterback by committee guy. Yeah. That is the guy at this point. Notre Dame needs a 48-yard field goal from Jonathan Doerr to win it. A big kick for him. I had joked he was getting into Yips territory, but a nice win, especially on his leg. Hopefully that gives him a little bit of confidence, but this team's going to kill me with the quarterback thing. They're just going to kill me. They started Jack Cohn. He looked dreadful. They bring in Tyler Buchner. He looked good initially, but then he looked dreadful.
Yeah.
And then late in the game, they go back to Jack Cohn, who looks a little bit like Joe Montana late. And Notre Dame wins.
With Avery Davis? That's
yeah.
Who caught.
And then Notre Dame wins.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Look, I don't know how long this is sustainable. I guess Notre Dame's still technically in the conversation. I don't know how many people are buying Notre Dame as any
conversation
kind of
for what?
Well,
best
they got one loss. They're going to be in the top 12.
No.
I'm not buying it. I'm just saying they're going to be in the conversation. The quarterback thing is frustrating, but I think it's going to be a committee approach. Don't know what they're doing there.
Right.
Just seems like that's going to be the move. They've got a bye week here. Maybe they could take the bye week to figure something out and decide what they want to do moving forward. But
no,
a win's a win's a win. Especially at night in Blacksburg, that's a good one. Notre Dame dealing with a ton of injuries, but I guess the upside of that is that there are a lot of younger guys getting some work.
Oh God, by the way, I'm looking at Notre Dame's schedule. You might be right. Oh my God.
I know
USC
I'm right.
In North Carolina and South Bend, Navy. Oh, man. I mean, Navy showed some life against SMU. Virginia throwing the ball 80 times a game with Brennan Armstrong. The Jeff Sims bouillabaisse at Georgia Tech. And Stanford on the road. Oh, my God. It's very strange. This could be... Oh, my God. What year was it when Notre Dame... Was it with Ty Willingham where they just got absolutely shelled by Oregon State? Like they would win every game by four and look bad, but like they just won every game ugly and then they blown out by Oregon State in the desert.
No. Chad Johnson.
I think that's where we're heading. I think that's where we're heading with this Notre Dame season.
I don't know where we're headed, but I know where we're headed for Tech and it's going to be more games like this because this is a gritty team. I saw on one of the Virginia Tech blogs this morning, they call out the grit of this team.
Okay.
They play hard. They play hard. They're going to be close with everybody they play.
Yeah, the offense is playing on a 17-yard field. Like, they're giving themselves a ceiling in the passing game, and I don't know whose fault that actually is. But, yeah, they play hard. There's just... And we talked about this in the season preview show. This is one of the very few things we got right. Virginia Tech, this is what we said. We said Virginia Tech will be fine. Where do they pop? Where do they excel? Like... Nope, nowhere. They're just fine.
No.
They're aggressively competent, which is not good enough at Virginia Tech. It's not good enough in Blacksburg, and it was on display once again. I mentioned Virginia. Keaton Thompson, by the way, an under-the-radar amazing story. Like, will he, won't he transfer from Mississippi State, becomes a quarterback kind of briefly, situationally for Virginia, and is just absolutely great as a receiver in this comeback win against Louisville on the road. Weird that this is a Virginia team throwing the ball as much as it is. I think there is something about Bronco Mendenhall that he does have that, like, build the whole plane. If you remember the Bryce Perkins experience, he's like,
oh, yeah.
It's all on you, Brennan. We'll see what happens. It's all on you. So whatever. They're winning games and not always winning games. And yeah, Georgia Tech sneaks by Duke. And I mentioned the Jeff Sims bouillabaisse. He will fill up the stat sheet in every conceivable good and bad way. You want an interesting run. You want an interesting pass. You want a fumble. You want an interception. You want red zone weirdness. You want inaccurate but also big play. Like the Jeff Sims bouillabaisse.
The smorgasbord.
Always being served in Atlanta. Oh, and Florida State won two straight games.
Two straight games.
Come on.
Know, baby.
Yeah, Florida State looked awesome. They did.
Let's go over the Pac-12. Can I go over the Pac-12, please? Thank you.
No. No. Why?
Arizona State beats Stanford. This one was played earlier in the week. We had Wazoo over Oregon State, 31-24. UCLA won late night, 34-16 over Arizona. And Utah. Nice win for Utah, 42-26. You know, one thing that we got some feedback on that we probably should call out. Utah has been going through a lot as a team. And, you know, we tend to joke around on the show a lot about the goofiness and Calzada's armada and the Jeff Sims smorgasbord. But to have a player on your team be shot and killed in season is very difficult. I can only imagine how difficult that is for the players. They went through an incredibly difficult week dealing with his funeral. And, you know, this is already on the heels of what went down.
Ty Jordan, yeah.
Awful stuff that Kyle Whittingham has had to endure here as coach of this team. And for them to kind of come out and go up against USC and put in the effort that they did, I think really reveals the character of this team. It reveals the character of the coaching staff. And it really speaks volumes to, I think, just how tight-knit this team is to go out there and play. Say what you want about USC and the state that they're in, but it's still a talented team. And so for Utah to go out there and do what they did, I think it's just damn impressive, regardless of stats or any of that stuff. Just good on them for pulling together, playing well as a team, and getting a great win.
Yeah, I can't imagine what, and it's not just Kyle Whittingham, of course, and I don't know you didn't mean that, but like the entire Utah football universe, all the players, all the support staff, all the fan base, like something this horrific, going back to Texas for another funeral, as you mentioned, for the Ty Jordan thing. I'm sure it was on some level emotionally very cathartic to come out and play like that. I mean, it's football. It's in the grand scheme of things, it's a game, it's frivolous, and this is real life. And just, you know, our hearts and thoughts are with everybody involved in the situation. And I just, you know, I can't imagine what everybody's going through there. You know, just these are human beings. You know, we joke about these things, as you mentioned, but man, good for Utah coming together like they have, both on and off the field. Good for USC and the Pac-12 sort of really seeming to put out, you know, heartfelt messages of support and everything like that. So a horrible situation that no team, no human, nobody should have to deal with.
We'll shift gears here a little bit. We'll talk about ASU. ASU kind of dominated Stanford.
They did. I mean, the first half. Yeah.
First half. Kind of dominated Stanford. I was very unconvinced about ASU covering that point spread.
Yeah.
Because ASU has really scorned me before in the past. They have not proven themselves to be a trustworthy ally. But what good in this game?
Will you now shift your attention to Oregon's struggles, finally?
If you want me to.
Will you now shift your attention? No, I'm just saying because you were like, well, Stanford beat Oregon. Like, we need to have an Oregon conversation. ASU ran the ball really, really well. Stanford has been bad against the run all year long. We've seen it week in and week out. ASU, they have the weird, like, lateral pick six in the second half. Good for ASU, winning this game comfortably, and they did what at least a pretty good team should do against a down Stanford program.
And you said you're buying Arizona stock. Why?
I'm buying Arizona stock. I just think a team that is missing as much as they are in terms of depth and talent, they don't have a quarterback of the future at the moment. Like, I know they have a guy committed from Southern California who's interesting, but against a lot of these teams that have so much more, against Oregon, against UCLA, I mean, they really took it to DTR. They were right there with Oregon late in that game. Like, they're not good enough to win these games, and eventually I think they will be. I just think the hires have been strong on that staff, especially highlighted by Don Brown. If he's able to stick around, if they're able to find guys on the West Coast and maybe Texas, as Arizona has done in years past, I think there's something to Arizona in a wide-open, nonsense Pac-12. I'm willing to buy Arizona as an ascending team. Now, it's difficult to say when they've lost as many games as they have, but no, I'm encouraged by that they don't look like Colorado has looked like largely a nightmare in year two of Carl Durrell. They won a bunch of games last year, but there's a hopelessness to Colorado, and not to pick on the Buffs, because I love the Buffs, but there's a hopelessness to teams facing situations like Arizona's facing that I don't see in the Cats. So I'm buying stock early.
And I watched most of this game late night. I was up late taking notes and whatnot. They definitely seem more organized.
I think Jordan McLeod threw like five interceptions at Oregon, and they were still in that game much later than they should have been. So I think it's an encouraging sign. That's a deep, deep cut, though. That's a conversation for the offseason. Good for Wazoo for getting better over the course of a game. Jaden DeLora made plays. Deion McIntosh made plays. Oregon State is a tough, tough out. Oregon State went for it, and I always appreciate that in some bigger spots where they could have punted, field goal, whatever. And Wazoo came up with stops, and they won that game late. Good for Wazoo. It's been a... we'll call it a trying, weird year in Pullman thus far. And I don't know what the future holds for Nick Rolovich and that program and where the leadership goes because of the vaccine mandate in Washington. But on a much more micro level, good for those players. Good for Wazoo as a program for getting over the hump.
Four other games here just to call out very quickly. Cincinnati runs one up on Temple 52-3. We had SMU by 7. Over Navy.
Comeback.
31-24. Coastal runs one up on the Arkansas State Red Wolves, 52-20. And San Diego State, 31-7 over New Mexico. Any other games that we should call out, Dan?
Northern Illinois winning football games. They beat Georgia Tech early on. They now go to 4-2 with a win over Toledo. Bowling Green came in. We mentioned this on Solid Saturday show as the only undefeated team against the spread. They go up. And then Akron lays it on the Falcons. So good for Akron on the road. They've been kind of a disaster. We had the UMass game. Did you pay any attention? UMass, UConn, UMass ends up winning that game.
Yeah.
In sort of a nightmare matchup, a nightmare scenario. Colorado State has had a disappointing year, but so has San Jose State. Now the Spartans lost to the Rams of Colorado State, who started their own season losing to an FCS team. UCF with a nice win with a backup quarterback over ECU. UTEP is a 5-1 team, Ty.
You're a big UTEP guy, aren't you?
The Miners of UTEP. I mean, Southern Miss is going to struggle for a little bit. I have to look it up. It's Gavin Hardison, who came in having a better season than he had a game against Southern Miss. UTEP is 5-1. UTEP is 5-1. I shout it out, man. I don't know. When there's like good stories of improvement and competence, Western Kentucky loses in a shootout against
UTSA.
The UTSA, the Roadrunners. Two really good quarterbacks. Bailey Zappe, Ty. I don't have the sound at my disposal. 523 yards. You might have this in a losing effort.
I do have it.
Yeah. Otherwise, Air Force Wyoming was a matchup between teams that hadn't lost a bunch, but Air Force now moves to 5-1 themselves. Really strong defense. They win that game 24-14. Just to mention that Utah-USC game away from Utah, Drake London is fully unguardable, and it is a disaster for the sport that he is playing for a below-average, woeful Trojan team because he is an incredible, incredible watch, and I wish he were just on a bigger stage than playing for USC. And Carson Strong in Nevada put it on New Mexico State. Memphis lost. Memphis is yet to win in the American. Lost, Tulsa, Phillip Montgomery a little bit on the hot seat with a nice win at home as Tulsa moves to 2-4. Do you have any? I can bring up the Pat League scores really, really quickly.
No, that's fine. We're good. We're good. We don't need to look at those. Pat League's rough
scanning.
This year. It is
rough.
Oh,
man. Lehigh does not score once again.
No.
Oh, man. The Quakers 20. The engineer's zero. That's
maybe all. Taquan Roberson could transfer to Lehigh.
I mean, what is Penn State's quarterback situation?
It's
short-term, medium-term, long-term?
It's put Sean Clifford in some sort of cryogenic healer and get him back out there because...
we weren't even sure if he was going to come back this year.
Yeah. Clifford, I never thought I'd be this confident in Sean Clifford, but Clifford is the answer this year. You know, they've got some prospects coming in here in the near future. Hopefully, Drew Allaire will maintain his commitment to Penn State. But he would seemingly be the future.
Okay.
Unclear as to what we do in the present, though, if Clifford's going to be out for any extended period of time. He's a tough kid. My guess is that he'll want to be out there if he can. If there's any way, he will be out there. But unclear at this juncture as to what that actually means, if that's going to be doable. So we'll see.
Oklahoma State, Texas next week. Arkansas, Auburn in Fayetteville. Florida at LSU. Kentucky, Georgia, as you mentioned, a big headliner. Alabama's at Mississippi State. BYU, Baylor.
Jeff Grimes Bowl, baby.
TCU, Oklahoma will be interesting. Ole Miss, Tennessee, as you mentioned. That's my headliner. SEC Network, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Inject it straight into my brain.
I will move that up to our headliner section of the
Please
week.
Please do.
7 preview doc right now, just so we don't forget it.
Yes. Done.
Let's get to our doodle alerts, Daniel! Who do we got here? I have 6.
Xavier Worthy, Tyquan Thornton. We're staying in Texas because for obvious reasons. Zach Calzada and the Calzada Armada. Zach Evans and Kendre Miller. Look at that, the duo. A lot of Texas there. The updated Oklahoma backfield of Caleb Williams and Kennedy Brooks. How about that? Ladd McConkey, because I just like saying Ladd McConkey out loud. Keaton Thompson, I mentioned, for Virginia. Will Levis doing everything for Kentucky. And how about Isaiah Likely, Coastal Carolina?
Yeah.
A bajillion yards receiving against Arkansas State midweek. How about that?
All righty. Well, fun show. Great week of college football. Great week of your reverbs. Great week to be a college football fan.
Yes. Unless
you're a fan of Alabama, in which case we apologize for that. We didn't do it. But will say that after so many years of getting to week 6 and feeling like the end was inevitable, that it was going to be Alabama and Clemson or Alabama and anybody, for the first time in maybe the entirety of us doing this podcast, it feels like there is some bit of doubt as to who our Final Four teams are going to be, who the eventual national champion is going to be. I've got some likely contenders, as I'm sure you do, but I can't remember a time in recent memory where it feels like so much is very much up for grabs.
Who had the worst Saturday as a fan base? If you are a fan of this team, like, I understand how terrible it is to be a fan of a team in Penn State situation, where there's just no hope once you see that the offense is going nowhere with the backup. That's really tough. And to have it drive after drive after drive. Is it Nebraska?
Yeah, I think it's...
Alabama's tough, but, like, it's on the road. Like,
no, I don't... Look, you can't feel that bad for Bama. Well. Bama's won everything. I think it's probably some combination of Nebraska.
Syracuse?
Of Penn State. I don't want to say LSU, because LSU is still just a couple years removed from that incredible championship.
Right. Is it Arkansas?
Arkansas had a chance. You feel bad for them.
Yeah.
Couple teams you could throw in there.
Yeah. I think my answer is Nebraska.
Tough week for Nebraska.
I think it probably hurt the most to be a Nebraska fan yesterday, would be my guess. Although they might be used to it. I don't know.
Verballers.com, again, is the URL for our Patreon. If you want to go on out and subscribe, you get these shows, all of our shows, early. You get access to our Discord server. You get access to some of the bonus content that we produce on a weekly basis. That includes videos. That includes the weekly Q&A show that we've been doing. We're really working hard. We hope, we think we're doing a good job for our Patreon subscribers.
Oh, we are 100% doing a good job. People are buzzing.
Verballers.com.
Discord server. People love it. The new shirts came out. Just everything's great.
Verballers.com.
By the way, the answer is Texas. Texas fans had the worst day.
Texas fans also had a pretty bad day.
Yeah.
Go on out to solidverbal.com as always throughout the course of the week. Check out all of our shows if you haven't already. Read the articles out there on the website. We publish 3 of them per week, Dan.
Yep.
That is all I got.
Same.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt, thanks for hanging with us. Another wild week of college football. What will week 7 have in store? We'll be back a little later on this week to help walk you through it. In the meantime, for that guy over there, Dan, for myself over here, Ty, stay solid.
Peace.